Welcome to the In the Limelight podcast. I'm your host, Clarissa Burt, and every week I bring you great information from fabulous people that I get to meet all over the world. I interview public figures, influencers, entrepreneurs, thought leaders, millionaires, and moguls that share their know-how, tipping points, pivotal moments, and life lessons. I promise you educative, empowering, and entertaining conversations with entrepreneurs that have a social conscience. Don't forget to find me on social. You can find me pretty much everywhere. Facebook, it's Clarissa Burt Official. Also, sign up for my newsletter at clarissaburt.com. That way you can keep abreast of the In the Limelight media as it's coming out. And you'll be getting my weekly newsletter along with the In the Limelight magazine every quarter. Check out inthelimelightmedia.com.
Hey, everybody, it's Clarissa. We are back in the limelight. And let's hope that it technically works today because we are just having some issues. But I think we're good to go, and we're just going to move forward with this edition of In the Limelight and yet another really, really cool entrepreneur today. Reminding you that you can go over to YouTube to watch these videos, Roku, Chromecast, Apple TV, Amazon Fire, all the lovely places like that. And then for the podcast, you can go over to In the Limelight Media, or we've got them out on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple TV, and all the other places that you can find podcasts. Don't forget that you can go over and take a look. Also, clarissaburt.com, you can go over and take a look at the In the Limelight magazine. It is intelligent media for the savvy entrepreneur. We've got a new drop coming up on the middle of October with the new edition and the new brand new first time in the world for digital publication. Really cool technology that's coming out that I think you are going to absolutely love. I'm going to bring him on. We're just going to start saying hello now. There he is. There's Nicholas Hinrichsen.
Hinrichsen. Hi, Clarissa.
It's better than Heinrich. I said it right this time. Okay, so Hinrichsen. Yes, of course. I knew that last week when this didn't work. All right. Why did I not know that this week? Hinrichsen, well, you are originally from Germany. We do know that. And then at a certain point, you came to the United States. You graduated, I think, in 2011 from Stanford, was it not?
13, yes. 11, I came over. 13, I graduated.
You graduated, yeah. And then you, through Y Combinator, you did this really cool thing where right. You raised some money. And it was like the tune of $10,000, which was venture funding. And then you and your friend Chris Coleman pulled together a company that was called Carlypso. Tell us about Carlypso.
Correct. So it was $10 million, not $10,000.
$10 million. You are absolutely right.
You know, we wouldn't have gotten very far with $10,000.
You're like my fifth interview today. Fried. Okay. $10 million. Of course. Of course, it was $10
million. No worries. So I moved to the US in 11 to go to business school and met Chris at Stanford. Chris is a huge, huge car enthusiast. His first car was a DeLorean, the one from Back to the Future. He actually this morning called me from the DMV station telling me that his kid car qualified and now he has a VIN and is allowed to drive his kid car in the street. So that's the extent to which he loves cars.
Okay.
All our classmates asked him for advice how to sell a used car after we graduated. And that's how we slipped into all of a sudden becoming used car salespeople with a Stanford MBA degree.
Right.
And then our professors and lecturers heard and found out that we were selling cars and were really intrigued by what we were doing. We ended up raising seed funding from them, went through Y Combinator, which is a startup accelerator in the Bay Area,
right.
And then raised a Series A of, in total, we raised $10 million exactly.
Wow, that's amazing. And then yeah. I know that after, I don't know how long after that, you about 5 years, I suppose, 4 or 5 years after that, 4 years, you sold Carvana.
Correct. So what we ended up doing is we built this business where we would initially it would help you, Clarissa, sell your car to somebody else, but we pivoted the model and stopped working with private sellers and instead focused on institutions. Institutions have much, much broader selection, wider and deeper inventories.
Right.
And they're also slightly more rational around the value. They're a little less emotionally attached to their vehicles. And so that became a really good business. We scaled it to slightly north of 150 cars a month.
Right.
And then we asked ourselves, should we raise a Series B, another venture round, or should we figure out if there's other opportunities to maximize the value for the company? And that's when we started talking to our friends at Carvana, compared notes and realized that we had built something that they found really intriguing. And instead of trying to build two companies separately, we decided to sell our company to Carvana.
Right. And I think I remember in our last chat that we tried to have and didn't really happen was that you were talking about fleet, you know, fleet cars. You were talking about, I think, rental cars. Those are the kind of cars you're talking about that, you know, don't really have that sort of emotional value attached. So, yeah, cool. So then you just, you made the deal with Carvana, which is amazing. I know we have one here in Phoenix that I see frequently on the highway. And the original concept to me looked really strange, you know. And then I went, you know what? I really don't like going to the dealership. It's not a fun experience at all. And I think that that's probably one of the really cool things about Carvana. And I know that you also moved forward with, I think you were started to consult with them in some way.
Yeah, so we got into the car space because we really wanted to change how used cars are being sold. We wanted to build something like Amazon for used cars, e-commerce. And so we got to a certain level, but realized that in order to take it all the way, we were missing two ingredients. Number one, we required a lot of physical infrastructure. We thought it's a heavier software business, but we learned, and this is just how these businesses go, we learned that you need a lot of physical infrastructure to transport and recondition vehicles. Number one. Number two is we noticed that we couldn't serve a large portion of the market, people with credit scores below 700. Because if you're a new dealership, you only really can work with credit unions. They only accept prime credit. And the majority of the market is not prime. The majority of the market is below 700. And in order to cater to that segment, you actually need to build a slightly bit different business. Carvana is fully integrated, which makes the experience so awesome. You can get financing in by the car from the same vendor. And those were superpowers we didn't have.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you've moved forward now with Clutch, which is another really cool concept. And that's refinancing, which I had never heard about before. I didn't even know it was possible.
Exactly.
To refinance your car. Is it something you created? Did you find the need? And was it the chicken and the egg or the egg and the chicken first?
The chicken and then the egg. No, there were two insights that led us to start this business, this new business. Number one was when we were running our business, think of us as a traditional car dealership, just everything online.
Right.
More than 80% of the people who got a loan to finance their vehicles asked us, the dealership, for advice on, do you have a loan for me? And so that's counterintuitive because usually people don't trust dealerships.
Sure, of course.
And Hagland really are very skeptical. And then once that part of the experience is over, all of a sudden they extend a lot of trust to the dealership, referring all these financing and insurance products to you. And so as a result, dealers are incentivized not to give you the loan with the lowest rate, but they're incentivized to give you the loan that pays the dealership the highest referral fee. So the day you buy a car, you could actually already refinance it and save a couple of $1,000.
Wow.
So there's a lot of money in the financing. Insight number one. Insight number two, and that we learned throughout the 7 years in the car space, people with non-prime credit, so if you have less than 700 credit and you make your payments 6, 12, 18 payments in a row, you improve your credit a lot. You migrate in credit.
Sure.
And if you migrate in credit, that means if you were to apply for a new loan, you would qualify for a much lower rate than the original rate on the original loan. Yet nobody offers you to refinance your loan and lower your rate because the incumbents, the lenders that are out there, it's not good for them. They get their loan through the dealership. They're happy with that distribution channel. And then if they refinance their own loan, they make less money. It's been done for a while. The problem is it's really inconvenient to do it unless you use technology to do it.
Yeah. So, and this is it's relatively new with Clutch, isn't it?
Exactly. So we stayed on for 3 years with Carvana, which was incredible. Obviously, what an experience. And then Chris and I went on and left in June to start the new business. And the new business really is a digital platform to refinance your auto loan. It means it goes from very few clicks to a firm credit offer.
Right.
And then we'll take care of all the paperwork.
Wow.
We went out. First thing we did was talk to investors, the same ones that we raised our previous capital from, and asked them if they want to get involved.
Right.
We're about to close a funding round. And we started building the product. So if you go to the website, it's www.withclutch.com.
Right.
You can refinance your auto loan in a few clicks.
Yeah, it's really cool. And if I go over here, I can see, first of all, you just submit an application. It's like three steps. You submit an application, boom, done. Then you choose the best option. Do they do that with you? You guys work together with them?
Yeah, correct. So we are not the lender. We're not a bank. And the reason we're choosing not to is because lenders in the car space are very good at what they're doing. They're just not very strong at acquiring customers.
Right.
That's why they heavily rely on dealerships.
Right.
And so we're a marketplace between the customer and the lenders.
Yeah, and this can all happen within like 24 hours on a good day.
Less than that, yeah.
Wow, that's really great. So, and then you have down here auto finance topics, like, you know, there's protection products. What's a protection product?
Yeah, so when you buy a car, you actually sign 6 contracts. You just don't realize. You buy a car, you trade in your old car,
yeah,
you finance the car.
Yeah.
You have your extended service plan warranties, you have your gap insurance, and you have a car insurance.
Right.
And so the wedge into the market is refinancing. That's how we want to acquire customers. But once we helped you in refinancing, there's a lot of other conversations we can have with you, be it around how to save money on your trade, next time you want to trade it in, how to maximize the value, understanding your tax benefits if you trade versus sell.
Right.
Taking a look at your protection plans. Are you still under warranty? If not, should we extend it? Are you overprotected because the dealer sold you something you didn't need?
Right.
And so the relationship we want to build with you is similar to the relationship Credit Karma has with you. Most Americans are in Credit Karma and check their credit regularly. And so we want to build Credit Karma for auto karma.
That's cute, auto karma. Are there car brands that hold better than others? I'm going to say yes, but I don't know.
You mean vehicle?
Yeah.
So actually, we see something very interesting. We see there's two dimensions where we see something that we didn't expect. Number one, people with challenge credit, those are the people we can help most, drive very specific vehicles. They usually drive Hyundais, Nissans, Kias, some Volkswagen, specific Ford models. And so when we dug deeper, we realized these are the vehicles that maintain their value best.
Yeah.
So they don't depreciate very quickly. The reason that is important is if you have a high interest car loan in the beginning, you don't pay off your principal, you pay a lot of interest. And so you will have what's called negative equity.
Sure.
The quicker the car depreciates, the longer you have negative equity.
Right. And
the better it keeps its value, the sooner you can refinance.
So what would be like the worst car brand that you really
any German car really? Like they're good before you buy them.
I had the Porsche Cayenne once. It was great, but every time something went wrong, it was, you know, I had to take a mortgage out of my house, you know.
Yep.
So, I mean, they're great cars. They're the best cars on the planet, but yes, they depreciate quickly, and they're very costly at upkeep, yeah. So that's awesome. Where do you see with Clutch now in the next 5 years and then in the next 10?
Yeah, no, so there's two really interesting trends or pieces of momentum we're seeing right now. Number one, due to the pandemic, people lost their jobs and they're starting to run out of their stimulus checks. And so they're starting to be creative around how to get cash before they find their new job. A very creative way to access cash is to access the positive equity in your car. So if you have a car loan, you make payments, you likely have positive equity.
Wow. Yeah.
It's basically like taking out another mortgage. It's taking out another loan on your car.
Yeah.
So that's a momentum that we're seeing and feeling, number one. Number two, all these people that lost their jobs and had to skip a credit card payment or two have a lower credit now than they had when they still had a job.
Yeah.
Yet in order to find a new job or because they want to avoid public transport, people are buying cars now more than ever. And so we see a lot of people enter suboptimal loan agreements, and we foresee them to be making payments just like they used to. 12, 18 months down the road, they're perfect to qualify for refinancing. So we see two big waves of momentum for people who want to refinance.
Wow. So obviously, you know, you're a stellar entrepreneur. And the idea is just, you know, I guess they just keep coming in some way, shape, or form. You think you're going to stay within the car world always and forever? Or are you?
We wanted to desperately get out of the car world, believe me. We had been doing this for 7 years. There's multiple thoughts. Thought number one, we feel like we're more in the financing world now. We understand cars better than most lenders. And so I think that will make us, that's like a superpower for us or a head start to get started in the space and to help lenders find new customers, number one. Number two, what we are finding recently is when talking to lenders, there's a lot they want to do, especially now that even their business is becoming more and more digital, yet they don't have any good software. Like especially credit unions, for example, they have the best product, lowest cost of capital. You can't get a lower interest rate than from a credit union.
Yeah.
Yet they're really, really not yet equipped to, and like weren't before COVID, now even worse, dealing with their customers and serving their customers in a digital way. Yeah. And so we feel like there's a direct-to-consumer angle for us, but there's also an angle where we help credit unions build software to access their own members and serve them better.
Right. So it's kind of like a plug-and-play, and it can plug-and-play into many different categories.
That's what we're hopeful. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. That's really great. So there are a couple of other questions I wanted to ask you, and really it's more from an entrepreneurial standpoint than the car standpoint. And we had talked about Y Combinator before, but how else is it possible for entrepreneurs to raise money? It's a daunting task. And, you know, for someone like me, I don't ask. I wouldn't know how to even start. You know, I don't know how to ask people for, you know, the time, let alone for money. So how is it, or what do you suggest for entrepreneurs and solopreneurs about going about finding money?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. It really depends on what business you want to build. So I happen to be exposed to two different types of businesses. There's this venture funding model where we start a company in the technology space where we hopefully grow exponentially and create like these huge valuation because of traction and growth. That's the space I know well because I'm doing it for the second time. The other world that I do with friends is real estate investments, for example, where we buy properties that need a lot of work and they remodel it. And so the reason I bring up these two examples is because the promise I'm making to investors are very, very, very differently. On the venture side, I raised money amongst others from friends and told them, expect to never see this money again, like write it off. And then if it becomes big, it'll be so much that we all throw a big party. But rest assured, like this is a bet mainly on Chris and me and our thoughts that we will find something that works. The real estate angle is very different. When we invest in real estate, I tell the investors, all your capital is secure. It's on the deed. There's a collateral. Your money is the last one that we lose, and we buy the property cheap. So it really depends on what you're selling. That's thought number one. Thought number two, for if you choose the tech route or the entrepreneurial route, where I can help, and if you put my contact details in the show notes, more than happy for people to reach out and seek advice. I can help with introductions to venture capital or business angels who want to invest early in companies that have the potential for exponential growth. If you're starting a restaurant, I don't think I'll be very helpful. If you're starting a tech company that can grow like that, that happens to be an ecosystem that I know very well.
Fantastic. And so when you are creating a company, is it always important to have an exit strategy? Or I think it's the last thing people think of when they're you know, going into the state for their LLC and you know, finding a logo. I think it's the last thing people think about as an exit strategy. Is it always necessary?
I think the logo should be the last thing you think about. We got ours on Fiverr for $5 because we still need to figure out what we actually do. I think, again, it depends on the type of investment. So the real estate project, I would never invest in any project where I don't know that there's a more or less liquid market. So I wouldn't build something completely crazy just because I think it's nice. No, I think the more standardized it is and more natural colors, and the more it blends in into the market, the better, because that means we can access a liquid market. On the venture side, it's different. Your exit strategy, ideally on day one, is build a company that's so big that you can IPO. And then on the way, you may be surprised with opportunities. A good example is actually Credit Karma. They've been around for, I think, 10, 12 years. Grew slowly. Nobody knew that they were doing really well. Wanted to go public one day. I think hired a CFO. And then Intuit approached him, said, hey, can we just buy you? And so these opportunities arise once you survive long enough and you have enough traction. In venture, your goal needs to be to go public, because otherwise you can't attract the funding. The investors they require that return in order for them to make it worth their time.
Right. Awesome. Well, I mean, so I understand also it says here you're an avid golfer. Have you been doing much of that in these COVID times?
So I used to play on the German national team, and then I moved here. And ever since, actually at Stanford, I played a little bit, and ever since, not that much. After 8 weeks, current quarantine started in March. 8 weeks into quarantine, I lost my patience, and I'm in San Francisco right now, went back to Phoenix, and then played golf with my real estate friends. And so that was really fun, but it's a very time-consuming hobby, and I...
With no exit strategy.
other than running out of balls. And then if I play, I still have these high expectations from the past.
Right.
And I get really upset if I don't play very well.
Just because you're not practicing enough, you know that. Anyway, you know that it's the golf capital out here where I live. And I'm picking up balls all the time because I'm right next to the golf course here. So anyway, how can people find you if they would like to connect? I know you said about putting your information, but I know you also, can they find you on LinkedIn?
Yeah, LinkedIn would be ideal. Just look for Nicholas Hendrickson or look for Nicholas. Just Google me, you'll find me probably. And I'd love for people to connect. If you have questions, want my feedback, if you have feedback for me, if you want to raise money and get some advice, more than happy to provide help and guidance.
That would be really awesome. Any last parting words of wisdom? Entrepreneurial wisdom.
I think that's...
Not golfing wisdom.
I wasn't going to start. No, I think entrepreneurship is an interesting one because it's like a loaded word. And people don't know what it actually means. I think an entrepreneur is a person who just gets going, starts something, even if it's a small project, trying to make revenue from an activity. And then if you do that, you'll be surprised how much you learn about things you didn't know. And if you savor surprises, you end up building a big business. So the most important thing is to get started.
Yeah. One of the things I always say is if you didn't want to work a 9-to-5, be prepared to work 24/7. Yeah. So with that having been said, don't go anywhere. Well, I say goodbye to everybody, and I thank Nicholas Hendrickson for being with us again today, because we tried this last week and it didn't work technically. So thanks again for your patience, Nicholas. Everybody, we're going to be here next week again with another extraordinary entrepreneur. You know the deal, here in the limelight. Talk again soon. Bye.
Thanks for watching this episode of In the Limelight TV, intelligent media for the savvy entrepreneur. Please consider liking, sharing, and subscribing to my channel and connecting with me on social. You can listen to this interview on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. And you can also go to inthelimelightmedia.com to read our digital magazine.